Hi, Whiskey Ringers. I hope you're all well and enjoying the podcast. As always, I welcome any thoughts, suggestions, and feedback you have to make the podcast better, and, of course, any suggestions you have for guests you'd like to see. I wanted to share with you a new way to participate in the Whiskey Ring Podcast Bottle Share Club. There are several people who have reached out to me about being put on a waiting list for the top tier. After much thought, I've decided to open that tier up to more people. If you have been hesitating, or if you are a current supporter wanting to level up, reach out to me at david@whiskeyandmywedding.com or through social media or Patreon, and I'll be happy to help you move up. I also wanted to send a special thanks to my current $25 a month patrons, who have agreed not only to this change, but who have been truly irreplaceable supporters of this and who make this podcast happen. Thank you to all of you in no particular order. I'm talking to you, Ken, Jesse, Jim, Bill, Don, and John, Yana, Connor, Zach, Scott, Ollie, Steve, and Jake. Without your support, this podcast wouldn't be happening anymore. And thank you for helping me to keep the lights on and keep guests coming to you every week. As always, you could support the podcast for as little as $1 a month with ad-free episodes starting at $5 a month. This support is the reason the lights stay on, and to make sure the podcast and website are the best they can be. Thank you to all who are already patrons, and I hope to have more listeners join soon. Visit patreon.com/whiskeyandmywedding ring to join today. Without further ado, here's a new episode of the Whiskey Ring Podcast. Hey folks, welcome to an update episode of the Whiskey and My Wedding Ring Podcast. Today, these kinds of update episodes are going to be reintroducing and bringing back to the fore some previous guests on the podcast who have been still evolving, still building their distilleries and their products and their product lines. So today, I'm thrilled to welcome back Mark McLaughlin of Old Line Spirits in Baltimore, Maryland. And he is here to update us on what's been happening. So Mark, welcome back.
Thank you, David. Glad to be here.
So Mark was on back in 2022. He was on episode 54 in August of 2022. And at that time, I had visited about 2 months before, gotten to really tour the distillery, try pretty much, I think, the whole lineup of products, even a couple that hadn't quite come out yet. I got to see the space and the cocktail bar, which was impressive. But since then, about a year plus or so, you got a year and a half, I've had a bunch of updates. So I wanted to just jump right in and ask you, the last year and a half, what has been updating?
Yeah, that's a lot. It's a good question. It feels like it was like 6 months ago that we spoke, but I guess it was that long ago. So, as far as Old Line goes, we've continued to evolve as a company. So we're growing year after year, which is obviously what we need to be doing and want to be doing. But as far as what we're putting in the market, the biggest development has been in the past, I guess it was about a year ago or less than a year ago, we rolled out what internally we called ASM, American Single Malt 2.0, which we marketed as American Single Malt Whiskey Flagship and American Single Malt Whiskey Navy Strength. So we used to have an 86 proof and a cask strength, and they were wonderful products. We loved them. And those were coming out of 30-gallon casks, anywhere from 4 to 5 years old. A great profile. Really, really happy. Those 30-gallon barrels we used were wonderful. But all along, as we grew as a company, we were laying down 53-gallon American Standard barrels, knowing that ultimately that was going to be our optimum flavor profile. And so those started to mature in a meaningful way last year. So we took the opportunity while we were switching from the 30-gallon barrels to the 53s. We knew there was going to be a jump in flavor profile in a very good way. So we took the opportunity to make some other changes that we wanted to make. One was branding. We kept the branding very similar. You'd certainly recognize the products side by side very easily. But we did want to just some things about the brand that when we originally designed it 6, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, were kind of nagging at us. We took, okay, now we're going to change, you know, the product in the bottle a little bit. We'll change the branding a little bit. And we also found that the old 86 proof, while I loved it, was just a little lighter than we wanted it. It was so easy to drink that we saw no reason not to bump it up in proof to 95. It's still supremely easy to drink, but you have that much more character and complexity along with that extra proof. And then on the Navy strength, 114 proof versus the old cask strength, we took that opportunity because Arch and I found ourselves almost always adding an ice cube or adding a little bit of water to our cask strength. And we're two Navy guys as well. So we're like, well, we're probably drinking this stuff around 114, 115 anyway. That seems to be a proof that we really like. Let's just go ahead and kind of write on brand, market it as Navy strength. And then we reserve the cask strength for a single barrel program now, which is great. So each cask strength release will be its own barrel. So a lot going on there. And really in the category, right? The category, as you know, is still coming together slower than we'd like. We wish there were TTB approval on American single malt by now. It's on the 1 yard line as far as we know, but the category is getting more attention, and it's really been exciting. So I'll pause there.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I visited and I was looking around the back, most of the barrels that you had at that point that were aging were in the 53 barrel, with the exception of really just the larger format for finishing and such like that. Like some of the wine casks are 60 or even larger, depending on what they are. Yeah, the change that I think struck me the most was the change from the 86 to the 95 proof. And there are a couple of things that work in my mind on that. I mean, the first one, like you said, I also quite enjoyed the 86 proof. And anyone who's listened to the podcast, they know I tend towards higher proof everything when it comes to American whiskeys, but American single malts, just like single malts or malts from anywhere else, for me, have more flavor at lower proof than, let's say, a corn distillate or even a rye distillate. So it can handle 86 proof better than another product. So the 86 to me was not by any means a pour that seemed to be missing very much. I definitely gravitated towards the higher proof, but that's more for taste than my own personal taste than anything else. But the switch to 95 has a couple of different connotations to it. So one, obviously, you've got the stronger flavor profile from the larger casks. They're fully matured. It does, though, if I'm thinking about it, would decrease the volume per barrel that you might be getting out just because you're obviously, higher proof, so less water in there. And then the other thing I was thinking was when you got to 95, that also means you don't have to worry really about flocculation in the bottles, too.
Agreed. Well, two really good points. One, well, easy one, the volume, right? Yeah, 100%. We knew we'd be taking our costs would increase per volume because, like you said, we're getting less of that bump from the proving. We actually ended up adjusting our price about from a target of $39.99 to $44.99. As a result, the costs have been going up throughout COVID, and we had held firm. And then when we that was kind of the final straw, where okay, we got to bump it up a little bit. But really not much. I mean, $45 on the shelf is still great for the category. But yep. And then yeah, absolutely. For the and we still do filter a little bit as far as any sort of cloudiness you might get from the proofs below 100. But it's a very light filtration. It's a cellulose filtration. It's not a full chill filter. So for us, the 100 proof is kind of the cutoff where we start to say, okay, that's really not a problem at all above 100 proof. 95, we still do that light filtration. And we've done an AB comparison on all these. At all proofs, really. And we tend to prefer the flavor character from on the lower proof stuff that has been filtered. Historically, we've kind of always gone with that. So we don't feel like we're losing anything flavor-wise, and we are gaining that more clarity of the bottle and less likely to have that, which that off-putting for some haze that some whiskeys can get, which we've had in some of our stuff in the past. As much as you and I both know that can be the good stuff, not everybody does. And even store owners sometimes will call in and say, "Hey, I think something's wrong with this." It's like, no, it's unfiltered whiskey, but you still have to deal with those things. So, but yeah, so that I think your points are valid. One thing I think I find as well with this is that because it's a 53-gallon barrel versus the 30, just the oak extraction is a little bit less aggressive than the older stuff. And to me, that eases off on the big heavy oak things. Like maybe the baking spice might be a touch less aggressive, the vanilla, the caramel, so a little bit toned down. Which I think is fine because it was so prevalent anyway. But we also have those things that are special about a malt whiskey that were still there in the 30-gallon stuff in the old 86, but maybe they weren't quite as detectable, such as some of the stone fruit flavors. I get nectarine and dark cherry and things like that a lot in our whiskey, and I get that much more in the new stuff because it's not being kind of outshouted by the oak.
No, totally makes sense. And I also go back to, sorry, actually, before I forget, I want to just mention this. If you have a store owner, a liquor store owner, who's calling and saying, Yeah, the whiskey's a little cloudy. That's a problem.
Yeah,
Like,
agreed. Agreed.
you
It's
probably
strong
should not be a store owner at that point. At least not
or
yet.
not someplace we sell, right? Yeah,
Yeah,
it has
not
happened in
quite
the
yet.
past, though. It most certainly has. Think of more like a city corner store, kind of liquor store that isn't really paying attention to the market. If you go to a real serious liquor store, you wouldn't have that. But we did get calls like that.
I'm sure. And honestly, if it's depending on your state, sometimes you can have spirits sold in like a grocery store or a pharmacy. Like if it's somewhere like that where the person's not a spirits expert or spirits buyer, okay, fine. But I'm just imagining like someone calling from, a well-known liquor store and just being like, yeah, the whiskey's cloudy. We've never seen that. And it just boggles my mind.
Yeah, I gotta
So,
show your ass at that point.
yeah. The other thing to mention too, and going back to your original kind of what's been updating is when we first talked in I guess we would have talked probably in July of 22 for an August date. At that point, we were hoping that the TTB regulations were going to be up and running because we knew that in September to October of that year, the standards of identity would go through their public comment period. And they did. I forget how long it was, whether it was 1 or 3 months, but it went through the public comment period. And then you, me, bunch of other producers, Discus, all thought, okay, well, it took us 6, 7 years to get here. We finally got the public comment period. It can't be long. And here we are in January of 2024, still
Yeah,
waiting.
I stopped holding my breath a while back on that. Like it even on the things like for like a public relations push, we want to be we and the other producers want to be ready to go on this when it happens, and we've kind of been ready, like with a plan in place, whatever D-Day is going to be, and D-Day just keeps not showing up, so it's frustrating. I mean, we all kind of act as if it's a category, and that's been working fine. You got that, Deb? Thanks. And that's been working, just fine for us. But it will be really nice to have it made official. Just that extra boost of kind of credibility. It's funny. I don't think this is the case, but when I start thinking about that over a drink, sometimes I think like, oh, is this like, are the bigger guys in Kentucky trying to hold it off so that their single malt that they're making can age a little bit, so when it hits, they're ready. But I don't think so. I mean, we've had nothing but support from large or small other distilleries. So I don't think anybody's that diabolical that they're managing. I think it's just the government operating slowly, and we're just at the tail end of the whip. So yeah, I'm with you. It could be tomorrow, it could be 3 years from now, and hope it's closer to tomorrow.
And just exploring that idea of like, because that has happened in other cases throughout history or in other countries where the larger liquor producers will hold back a category or do something with legislation to hold it back. But you're right though. In this case, that doesn't seem to be happening. I mean, I'm sure
Doesn't feel like it.
Heaven Hill would love to have, because they always like to say they have I think the greatest number of not only bottled and bond products, but the greatest variety of American categorized spirits, so I'm sure they would love to add to it. They had that 6535 mash bill, which didn't work so much for the Parkers, but boy did it work for the rare character barrels that they bought. But they've got that. Beam now has the Clermont Steep. So it's they're coming out with the products, and the Clermont Steep, kind of to your point, was aged at least 5 years before it was released. But at the same time, like it's not. It's being pushed, but it's not going to take over
Oh, agree.
any of the Jim Beam products.
Agreed.
So yeah, I don't really see any pushback. Now, I also can't say the other side how much they've been lobbying for it, as opposed to someone like you or like
Yeah,
Santa Fe Spirits
it's not
or
really their
yeah.
responsibility to do that, though, right? It's so agreed. Yeah, there's the Beam guys, the fact that Jack Daniel's put out an ASM about a year ago, I think. That's all good signs for us. I think people are slowly. Consumers are going to start taking us more and more seriously, not only as our products as a category continue to get better and better and better, but also as the big boys jump in. So,
And last time we talked, just speaking of other producers and how they relate, especially when you're talking about a newer category, an up and coming category. Last time we spoke, I asked you some questions about where you and Arch had kind of looked to for guidance and for inspiration. And I'm curious, a year and a half later now, with so many more producers, we're at the point now where there are more single malt producers in the US than there are in Scotland. And I'm curious if you've had the flip side now where people are coming to you for advice and guidance.
You know, that's a great question. It's funny. In years past, it was more, we saw more of it. I think there's a lot more people making single malts in America, to your point, and by numbers, of more than there are in Scotland. But I think a lot of these guys are doing it from the base of already having an operating distillery, whether they're making corn whiskey or whatever else it is. So I think a lot of them are probably really just going in with their learned experience and what they've done in other categories and applying it to malt, whether that works well or not, I'm not sure. But that, so we haven't got a ton. I mean, we occasionally get calls from people and we're always willing to help. As you probably heard me say before, we've got so much help on our journey that, the least we can do is pay it forward. So we're always willing to do that. But now the calls were more prevalent in the years past. I think that the calls were more, hey, I want to start a distillery. How do I do this? Less about, I want to make a malt. How do I do that? And I think the growth in distilleries has been a little bit, I think I'm not sure how much bigger the number is going to get. So those calls from people who are going to be starting up something from scratch, I think, are starting to slow down a bit.
And I guess it is fair because we're starting to see a little bit, not only the flattening of the curve for distillery growth in terms of pure numbers, but we're also starting to see some distilleries that started up in the 2010s or so, a couple of them starting to fold as well, just for many different reasons. It's not always purely economical. Sometimes they lose the space. Sometimes there's a legal change that hurts them, but there are more that are closing now. So I kind of agree with you. There are more probably. Rather than starting from scratch at this point, we're not only seeing people extending their line into single malt, but also the distilleries that would have come to you in years past are now producing the product.
Yes. Yeah. And
So
they're
we're
working
seeing
on
their
their own lessons
finish.
learned and they're exactly.
Yeah.
But to this day, we still, and then like most other people in the category, encourage that kind of dialogue. So if people do reach out to us, we're always willing to chat and help where we can. My cousin actually was a distiller up until about a year ago at a small place in Boston called Grand 10. And they were making a little bit of malt whiskey. And my cousin and he was a distiller there. And Jerry, our distiller here, would talk every few months. And it's just kind of how things work. It's nice.
With the new product, so you said there was when you especially with the 86 to 95 for the now flagship, and then also the slight lowering to 114 for the Navy strength while retaining the cask strength. So just talking about the flagship and the Navy strength, of course you were, as you said, there are going to be some flavor profile differences, different cask size, the age is probably about the same but not too much different,
From
and so
the legacy lines,
From the legacy line, from when you were using the 30-gallon versus
yeah,
the
the old
53.
cup was 4 to 5 years, and this will be 4 to 8. So there's still some 4-year-old juice in there because we like that profile, but we've got older barrels in there now. So yes, it's actually a little on
Right.
average.
So I'd love you to talk a little more about, because I love when brands do this and I love asking about it, which is when you're changing the proof and changing the flavor profile, of course, you've got people who love you for the 86 proof and loved you for the what was it, 120 proof on the
120,
or
124
120, yeah.
in the day.
There were people who loved you for those proofs and those flavor profiles from the original lineup. Now you're presenting a product now that it's a newer product. It's just as good, if not better, in my opinion. I love the original product. Clearly it won a ton of awards for me, not to mention the awards you've won everywhere else. But when you're looking at consumers who kind of stuck by you and brought you to the dance, as Fred Minnick would say, how did you go about telling them, okay, well, this is what we're doing. You're still going to like it. It's going to be a little different.
It's just the transparency. This was set in motion so long ago that whether we wanted it or not, it was coming, right? So even if, if we had said, oh, this 30-gallon profile is, we don't want to change it, well, by the time we already got to that point, we already had those 53s coming, right? Which for us is a
Right.
good thing. I do think the profile got even better. But that is every time we've done that jump, we actually used to do 10-gallon barrels years ago for a short period of time. And, people love that product. And when we switched to 30s, all those times we've kind of always kind of held our breath a little bit at each turn because, to your point, you have just people who've supported you, who've gotten us to where we are, A, you want to be respectful of them and they love what we're doing. We don't want to, just kind of do a 90-degree turn. And B, yeah, we want to make sure that it's better than we're giving them something that's even better than we think they're taking away. And that's worked out in our favor. I mean, definitely we've had certain comments of, to your point, like, hey man, I love the 86. I'll miss that forever. We still have a little squirreled away. So occasionally we'll pull a few cases out and sell them locally and people kind of, get excited for them. But by and large, the feedback has been largely very positive on that. We kind of made the right move as a company. And even though there's something that they're going to miss about the old stuff, the new stuff, meets or exceeds it. So, but it is a risk. And there was certainly a little bit of anxiety as we made that transition because it was the biggest transition we'd done in
Sure.
profile. There was definitely some anxiety, which luckily it played out well in our favor.
And did you, as you were transitioning to the product, did you do any kind of blending of the 30 and 53 to get there, or was it kind of a more clean cut between the two?
No, that's a really good question. And I'm 90%, as you asked that, feels like it's been decades since we made that choice. It hasn't been that long. I'm almost certain that our distiller, Jerry, with the 3,000-gallon blending tank, that for the last bottling or so of the old label, that we started to put in some of the 53-gallon juice. So is it putting the new stuff, older stuff in the old label as a bit of a transition period? So I think maybe a couple of months we were kind of putting out that transition product. Jerry would know for sure if he was sitting right here, but I completely forgot about that till you asked the question, but I'm pretty sure we did that. So that helps somewhat. I think, anybody who were buying those bottles along the way would see the transition and kind of be smoothed out a little bit. But I'm sure for every one person that, got all three of those bottles in a row, there was, five people who had one and then 6 months later bought the new one and there was no transition period. But yeah, it's a scary thing and we just kind of, went forward with it and it worked out.
And to your point earlier, it helps that you only had to do $5 price hike. I
Yeah,
mean,
absolutely.
that's you could have easily done. I mean, this is the stereotypical example is when Heaven Hill switched off the 6-year bottled and bond and went to the 7-year, and it went from like a $15 to a $40 product. Now it's up to 45, 50, with inflation and such. But give me with a $5 print, then you're and this is also talking 40 to 45 as opposed to 15 to 40. So, for the cost of a cup of coffee, it's kind of a risk worth taking. Like that's how I would look at it as from a consumer perspective. Is all right, I'll take the risk on this. They've held the price steady for so many years. Let me
Sure.
try it. So that to me that made sense. And I don't think that would have been too hard of a sell to just say, look, cost has gone up. Costs went up for everybody, for everything. So
The other part
$5
of
in
that
like
too,
great.
it's, oh, I'm sorry to step on you there, David. The other part of
No,
that,
no.
when you have, when you think like 86 to 95, excuse me, that's at 9 points. So that's, we probably went up, the proof probably went up more percentage-wise than the cost. So 86 to 95, so you're getting more whiskey in the bottle, right? Less water. So from that perspective, actually, you could probably argue that it almost washes out when you add, added the proofing aspect as well.
Yeah, agreed. And in so as you plan for the next couple of years, I guess the first question I think of is, are you pretty set in terms of everything from barrel size to the stills you have to your malt sources? Are you looking pretty steady for the next couple of years at this point?
Absolutely. So we kind of reached that point where those earlier stage for our company changes are, I'll never say never that they're done, but they're going to be, any change will be very minor at this point. So our profile of 4-year-old to 7 or 8-year-old, I see no reason for us to change that. We love it. Just as our stock ages, we still want to keep 4-year-old in that blend because 4-year-old delivers a lot of wonderful things. So the fact that there is the young, lively fruit, more fruity character, the 4-year-old, and a little more of the, tannin heavy, caramel heavy, 7-year-old and stuff in between is kind of what makes it what it is. So I think we'll keep that the same. Malt, absolutely. We've been buying from Great Western Malt House ever since we started the company, and with minimal exception here and there for something special and different. But for the most part, that's our source, and they've been great. We're still going to produce here on our 300-gallon still and out in Ohio on that, on their Middle West Spirits, much, much bigger system. So all those things are going to stay the same. I'm still going to age it right here in Baltimore. So, really, it should be a pretty steady profile for the foreseeable future with us.
Now, that being said, I was told that you have a new rye coming out, or a new pro sorry, that I was meant to be more of a reveal than anything, but sorry. You have more of, you have a rye coming out in the spring.
We do, yeah. So, Old Lyme, as I'm sure we talked about last time, our swim lane is single malt, right? You know that very well. So, as much as we love rye and we love bourbon and love other categories of spirits, we've kept our focus on single malt with some of the imported rum and a tiny bit of vodka locally in the local market. But really, the single malt is 90% of our time and energy and effort. And so we weren't planning on doing a rye a long time ago, nor a bourbon, even though we love those categories. And the reason that we changed our mind was that Maryland, as being historically a rye whiskey state, has created a rye whiskey trail, or is creating a rye whiskey trail. So in order to be on that trail, you have to be producing a rye whiskey. So that gave us that extra nudge to, hey, let's just see what we can do that is not only a really good rye whiskey, but also something that fits kind of our DNA as a company. And we had a stroke of luck in that there's a brewery about two blocks away, and their flagship beer is called 51 Rye IPA. So it's 51% malted rye, 49% malted barley. And we worked with them to get some of their mash without the hops in it. And we fermented it here and distilled it here. And it was awesome. It's great. We love it. So it's a high malt rye, which is just, we're a malt whiskey company, and to have a high malt rye whiskey, which you don't really hear that at all that I'm aware of
No,
out
at
there. The
all.
fact that we could, work with a partner two blocks away to do it, it worked out. Just everything fell into place. It really is a nice whiskey. It's got a little bit of that rye spice. Definitely has a lot of the mouthfeel, the rich mouthfeel of the malt. It's got the sweetness and really present, pleasant, grain flavor. So it's a different style of malt of rye whiskey, which is great because, we're a different style of company with what we're doing.
It straddles a good line because it's managing to be a new product, a new extension for you, and a new category, not a new category, a new style of rye, but at the same time still fits the Maryland style of rye, which is that 51% in the mash bill.
Exactly. So yeah, Maryland, as you to your exact point, Maryland ryes are typically a little more, corn heavy. Ours has none, but yeah, they're a little sweeter than the Pennsylvania versions. And yeah, and this, that it just all came together in a perfect confluence of factors. So we're doing very little of it. We'll probably start to ramp up a little bit, but we don't intend at this point to have it into full distribution. Far from it. It'll mostly be sold here at the distillery, maybe certain select accounts in the state. In the future, I can't say if that'll change or not, but what we want to make sure we don't do is, as good as it is, as exciting as it is, we make sure that it has the commensurate amount of time and energy. It doesn't take us away from really what we're arguing as a company, which is the ASM.
Sure. And in that way, so just to be clear, are you envisioning it as a kind of permanent but limited release, or a limited as it comes in or as it's ready
It'll be
release?
a recurring limited release. As far as what the frequency is going to be, that is TBD. First one says April, as but at least annually, I imagine. And annually is probably what I think people should expect, at least for the first couple of years. But yeah, so limited release that will recur most likely annually.
And if you plant it for the spring each year, I mean, that works with the rye crops, to obviously you're not getting the rye right then and, getting the whiskey, but it just fits well with the winter cover crop being the rye. Everyone's harvesting rye, and then you can come out with the rye whiskey in spring to give you that little warmth for the beginning of March, but also some spiciness going into the summer.
Agreed.
And I'm thinking too, the profile must be quite different, not only being the 51% rye and 49% malted barley, but that 51% rye is malted rye.
Yeah.
So what kind of flavor profile would you should we expect as consumers from that?
So I haven't had it probably in about 3 months, but from my last taste, and it was, I don't know how old was it then, it was probably about 3 years in a 30-gallon barrel, which for a rye actually is pretty nice. Rye, I think, can be a little younger and still, doesn't need quite as much time as other types of whiskeys, in my opinion. But so definitely, it's not as aggressive on the compared to like a 95.5 rye or something. Much, much
Sure.
more gentle on the spice. The spice is there. It's pretty gentle. It's not really kind of it's not the first thing you notice, and the mouthfeel is very, very rich. There's a lot of sweetness to it, not as sweet as a bourbon, certainly, but definitely more sweetness than most ryes that I've had. And then really, yeah, just things like maybe a little less grainy, a little more kind of stone fruit forward from the malted barley. But yeah, but it's still evolving, right? So it's that those little 30-gallon barrels, you could taste that thing every 6 months and it's going to taste meaningfully different.
Sure, absolutely. Well, that's something I'm going to have to maybe travel down for if I can.
Yeah, please.
Because I mean, I want to try it anyway. I like trying not only new stuff, but like you said, some things that are a little different. You know, we have some, you've got some great neighbors making great Maryland style ryes near you, like a big fan of Sagamore near you. You know, I visited them when I was down too, but they're not doing a malted rye whiskey. So.
Correct. You know who is who if they're not on your radar, you should keep an eye on them, is also in Baltimore, Baltimore Spirits Company. And they do, I think they do a combination of malted and unmalted rye. But I'm sure the website will tell you. But they're friends of ours and they make a really nice product too. So agreed. We love Sagamore, we love Baltimore Spirits. You know, it's and there's one other distillery called Louthan in Baltimore. They're really small. They were the first one of the kind of new generation of distilleries, but really it's the four of us, and it's all doing very different things, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, is that it's a I liked going down there, and it was one of my first whiskey trips really, because I just hadn't had really that much time to go down and visit distilleries. But being able to go down for like 2 or 3 days and hit all the spots down there, maybe some of the ones in Northern Virginia too, as you're going, like you can do that in 2 or 3 days and still get the full experience of doing the tours everywhere, going to tastings, which was so much fun. And I'm also thinking back to that tour. Have you had any occasion to fire up that diamond shape still
No,
there?
not since you were here.
Yeah.
Still, I can see it from where I'm sitting. It's still there. We could use it on a whim if we needed to. It's electrically heated, so it could be put into action really quickly. But no, there's been no reason for it. I don't think. I'm 95% sure that's the case. Of course, Jerry might tell me I'm wrong, the distiller, but I think we haven't fired it up in a while. Yeah, it's great. We have it there if we need it. I mean, it's more of a showpiece at this point, but it works.
Yeah, every time I look at you know, pictures from back then, I'm always like, that is the weirdest looking still that I've seen around here. And
It
it's
looked like a lava lamp, like a copper lava lamp. Yeah.
exactly.
The one actually that I'm looking at right now in this room, so I'm in this room being the bar, and the one you're talking about, it, you know, in the warehouse, as you remember, there's one in the, that's a 60-gallon still that you're talking about. It's a 30-gallon that I'm looking at right now. And it is, that was their original still. So the 60-gallon was their quote unquote big still when we took over Golden Distillery. So you have the 30-gallon in here, which looks equally weird. This one looks more like a genie lamp, I think, actually.
I remember that it was a little more like almost horizontally oriented.
I don't know how to, yeah. The guy who
It's
made it doesn't
odd.
do curves, I guess, just angles.
Yeah, it was odd. But if it worked, look, it worked. One of the lines that I've really enjoyed from Old Line, as much as I love the kind of core range, the one of the line extensions that I really love is the finishing series, the double cask series. And I've been fortunate. I've tried everything from the Madeira to the port, the sherry, one or two other, the rum finish, of course, and all of them have been just really good showcases. And because it's ASM and because of how you guys finish, the malts is not lost under these finishes. Like, you guys have a very good measure of when to stop. But for the most part, these have been limited releases, distillery only, maybe a local store or two, but very limited. And going into 2024, you're looking at a couple of these that are going to be more available as well.
Absolutely. Yep. So yeah. So as we've in the past couple of years, we've gone through the finishing process, and the first, you know, 3 to 4 years was really figuring out not only what would take a finish well with our whiskey, but also what would be marketable, really commercially viable. A good example is, you know, Sauterne is one of our best finishes quality wise, in my opinion, and people who love it, but it didn't sell as fast as some other more well-known finishes. So we're going to keep making it, but it's maybe not going to be a quite as often, right? Just because we love it, but it's also going to sell, right? Whereas the ports, the sherries, the Madeiras, the rums, those are much more, recognizable to the consumer, and those have more pull on them. But we figured out the ones that work the best. Madeira, I think it is, in my opinion, Madeira is one of the best we do. I love the port as well. Port is a little, it can be a little more aggressive, so people don't. That was probably our most aggressive finish, I think, the port. So if people want something subtle, the port's probably not the one for them. Whereas the sherry and the Sauternes can be a little more gentle, but they're great, and we're doing them. And now that we know what works the best for us, the company, we're ramping up production of certain ones. So the sherry, whether it's Oloroso or the PX that we're releasing next month, those are you're going to start seeing those more and more often. And in addition to stores, which we do, to your point, get them to some stores in limited releases, but mostly at the distillery, we actually now have the ability to ship product to 40 states via our website. So now these releases will, our goal, and so far we've been successful doing this, is that everything that's available to a consumer at the distillery is also going to be available online. And we're going to do our utmost to make sure that's the case. So yeah, so now those releases will be available to anybody anywhere in the US, with the exception of 10 states. So 40 states, every people can order.
And that's great for me because Baltimore's not that far a drive. I mean, it's 4 hours or so, 3.5 hours. It's just a matter of getting down there. So, but no, that's good. It means I won't miss anything. Any thought, and I have to ask this because I love this finish with a rye, to doing a Calvados finish or apple brandy generally.
No, actually, I mean, we're certainly not against it, but it hasn't been something we've discussed, at least not with me in the room. Yeah, no, I would be open to that. Absolutely. Yeah, we haven't discussed it with anybody, so it's certainly it's a fresh idea for us.
I suggest it only because I've had two now, two ryes, very, very different ones, both finished in Calvados casks, and it comes out almost like a spiced apple pie
Oh,
in a
is that right?
glass.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you get if you have a little bit of ex-bourbon cask influence, where you've got the kind of buttery pastry kind of vanilla notes in there as well. It just rounds it all out. Without losing the spice of the rye, and you get a little fruitiness in there too. It's really delicious. And I could see it working well with the Old Line ASM again, because it's got enough heft to it where it's not going to get lost.
Agreed. Agreed. It well, to that actually, and you made that point a little bit earlier, which I appreciate. We had to, everything's a learning process. So our first barrel finish we did was an Oloroso sherry. It was years ago, and what we did, we pulled product out of a 53-gallon barrel that had been about 2 years in there, so it wasn't by any means mature, but it was on the way. Put that into the finishing barrel, and went another 2.5 years. So it was overall 4, 4.5 years. So by the end of the day, by the end of the period of time, that 4, 4.5 years, and it was a mature product, right? It was, all the sharp edges were gone. It had nice complexity and flavor. It didn't smell or taste young at all. However, if you line that one up with the rest of our line, that would clearly stand out as being, this is just very, very different. And what we took away from that is that having our product in the new oak for that requisite 3 to 4 years first before we do anything else with it, no matter how long we're going to put it in barrel B, is really important to us, because it kind of sets that, it ensures that our DNA is fully kind of imprinted on that barrel. So at first, when we did, it was great. People loved it. We had a local whiskey club buy, and we did two barrels. They bought one of them, and we sold one here. And they loved it, but it's just, you would not, as a consumer who didn't know Old Line, you lined them up, somebody would say, oh, that's a different distillery, because it's just so different. So we've decided, for us, yeah, that 3 to 4 years is the minimum. Actually, 4+ years is the minimum before we even start looking at finishing, because we want that direction to be more firmly set before we go to the next barrel.
Yeah, it makes sense. And so this being an update episode, I want to also give it a little time to talk about some non-whiskey things, or not necessarily whiskey things, that you guys have been doing. And for Old Line, I wanted to focus on your philanthropy and community engagement in particular. You and Mark are both proud Navy guys. Is Navy like the Marines? Like, you're never out of the Navy or
Yeah, Marines are always a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? Fanatical
intense?
about kind of
Yeah.
everything. Yeah. So, no, I mean, there's still a very, very strong bond, with our friends that We were in the Navy with him, with the institution as well. Absolutely.
All right. I've never, yeah, like you said, like there's an intensity there. It's a little,
Oh yeah, absolutely.
but you know, you're both proud Navy, both ex-military guys, and you've so you several of the charities that you work with Old Line have a military connection to them. So I just wanted to give you a chance to just talk about some of the work that you've been doing both in the local community with that, like the you know Canine for Warriors, but also and the Baltimore Station, but also some of the broader ones like the Ohana Project.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So, yeah, I mean, we support a lot of different charitable causes. Not all of them are military, but the ones that are military related resonate the most with us. So, on the local side, you mentioned the Baltimore Station. For those of you, I'm sure many people won't be familiar with it. It's an old firehouse that it's been converted to a, not, I would say, a shelter, but a dormitory for homeless veterans, all male. And it's designed to give these guys a place to have a warm place to sleep, you know, three meals a day, work with recovery from any sort of a, you know, a substance abuse problem they may have, and also job training. So it's a wonderful organization. We've done, you know, we do several events with them a year, and think the world of them and the work they're doing. So that's wonderful. On the national side, you mentioned Team Ohana. That was a guy we met, a friend of a friend, who his name's Paul Lorre. And a couple of years ago, he decided, I wouldn't say on a whim, but he decided without any prior rowing experience to row a boat from Florida to somewhere in Europe. I don't know if it was Portugal or Spain or whatever, and got a team of three other people to do it with them. And they did it to raise money for Children's Cancer Fund and also for Canines for Warriors, which is what I'll get to next. We met him after he did that first ride while he was planning to do a second one, which he did in 2023, which was from Monterey, California to Hawaii. And again, just raising money for the same causes. So we just were blown away by the amount of dedication and effort that that Paul and his teammates put into this project. So that, by virtue of knowing them, that drew us into Canines for Warriors, which is very near and dear to Paul. And what Canines for Warriors does is takes dogs, essentially rescue dogs, and trains one, you know, ones that they can determine are trainable to be service dogs, trains them to be service dogs for veterans who are in danger of committing suicide. So veteran suicide is, I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but it was like 20 plus a day, I think, which is crazy. So their goal is to reduce that to zero, which is certainly a wonderful thing to work towards. So, and also, you know, who doesn't love taking care of a dog in a shelter that needs a home, and putting that dog together with a person who needs a friend. So great organization. So we did work with them through the Ohana Project, and also on our own, we worked with them directly as well. We've also worked with Fisher House, which is like a Ronald McDonald House for veterans, the Tailhook Education Foundation, which is a scholarship fund for children of naval aviators and maintenance people who are in need. So at any rate, it's just things that are really easy for us to get behind and get excited about.
It's fantastic stuff. I love seeing the give back to the community, both near and far. And as you said, still that maintaining that connection to the military, to the Navy. And you know, there's always a little water behind you. And as we see, I can see because as you
That's
know, I'm
right.
looking at this, the seal behind you of the Great Wave. So love it. Well, Mark, thank you for coming back on to update us to what's been happening at Old Line. Clearly, we've got more stuff to do. You got new products, new flagship, new Navy strength, a ride to look forward to. As we're recording, which again, I very much hope to taste, and we'll see if we can work that out. And yeah, it's been fantastic to talk to you again.
Likewise, really appreciate it, and I'm always here. I appreciate you taking your time to talk to me.
Absolutely. So with that, hang on with me for just a sec after recording. It's been a special update episode of the Whiskey Ring Podcast. If you have other guests from the past episodes you'd love to hear us update with and talk to again, let me know. Send me an email at david@whiskeymoonring.com. You can reach out to me on social media. Just like all episodes in the show notes, there will be links to Old Line Spirits for the website where you can now order for 40 states, and also links to social media so you never miss a release. With that, cheers, and I will see you probably a few days. I think it's going to be released on a Monday. So cheers, everybody. Talk to you soon. Hey, folks, thanks for listening to another episode of the Whiskey Ring Podcast. If you like what you hear, please go ahead and click that subscribe, follow, or like button. Leave a rating review on your podcast app of choice. and let me know what you want to hear. You can reach out to me through the podcast apps or email me at david@whiskeymyweddingring.com with any suggestions or ideas for new show guests. You can also support the podcast at patreon.com/whiskeyinmyweddingring. That's whiskey with an E, for as little as $1 a month. $5 a month gets you access to bonus content, including our soon-to-resume Under the Influencer series, and $25 a month means you join the Barrel Share Club. Each month, Barrel Share Club members get to try products sent to me for review, bottles from my own collection, and sometimes bottles that I just pick up because they're fun or interesting. Right now, only 5 spots remain in the Barrel Share Club, so grab your place today. Finally, please follow on Instagram. You can follow me at Whiskey My Wedding Ring or at Whiskey Ring Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Whiskey Ring. You can follow on Facebook at Whiskey My Wedding Ring or join the Facebook group, the Whiskey Ringers group. And I hope to see you there. Cheers. Thank you for the support and see you next time.